From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
On the panel this week, Philippe Gilly, U.S. Chief Correspondent for Le Figaro, and Tom DeFrank, Contributing Editor for the National Journal. Our moderator is Washington Bureau Chief for The Economist, David Rennie.
Good day, everyone. And here are the issues. Robert Mugabe resigned as President of Zimbabwe after 37 years. The 93-year-old was ousted by army chiefs angry at hints that power might pass to his wife rather than to his former vice president, Emmerson Mnangagwa. Talks on forming a new German government collapsed. Chancellor Angela Merkel said she might call snap elections 2 months after voters punished mainstream parties and offered unprecedented backing for the far right and far left. A wave of allegations about sexual harassment continued to sweep the worlds of American politics, entertainment and journalism. And Charles Manson, leader of a murderous cult that shocked America with a series of killings in California, symbolising the dark side of the hippie era, died aged 83. So, Philippe, let's start with Robert Mugabe, the only president that Zimbabwe has known since independence 37 years ago. Did he get ousted from power for being a brutal dictator, or was this somewhat murkier?
Well, from what we can see, it's a strange combination, I think, of a military coup, of a popular uprising, and also of constitutional transition, because you have a mix of the three, and you have the people in the streets celebrating the ousting of this old and brutal leader, autocrat. You have the army in the streets, but also guaranteeing that the constitutional order is maintained, and you have this successor who is chosen by the party, who is quite in the continuity of the regime, who was the second man for Mugabe for years, who is not a great Democrat, and you know, his nickname is the Crocodile. I mean, he was involved in some massacres back in the early 80s.
This is the former Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa.
Exactly, exactly. And I think the optimism of the population will last a few days at least, but it's not a guarantee that you know, everything is going to be well and optimistic in the future.
So, Tom, the reports are that the army essentially, as Philippe said, they essentially mounted a coup because they were very angry at the idea that power might be somehow transferred to Grace Mugabe, the much younger wife. Was this basically a kind of fatal miscalculation by a man who has survived by sort of cunning and brutality for all these years? Did he just push it one step too far?
I think he did. And the one step too far, David, I believe, was getting rid of Mr. Mnangagwa. The army has been unhappy about Mrs. Mugabe, known as Gucci Grace, for her lavish spending in European capitals. And then I think when he, in order to facilitate her rise to succeed him, Mugabe got rid of the vice president. I think that was the one step too far. It was a combination 1-2 punch that was too much for the army.
Philippe, clearly, here in a capital like Washington or in Paris or in London, for the longest time now, diplomats and ministers have called Robert Mugabe, an unfit dictatorial leader. But if you go to, you know, summits of African leaders, or you go to meetings of big African political parties in places like South Africa, to us, perhaps surprising number of people still regard Robert Mugabe as a heroic figure. What's in his background that explains his kind of literary
Well, apparently,
support?
when you preside to the independence of your country, when you secure the independence that came late in the case of Zimbabwe, only 1980, you keep this aura of being, you know, a kind of liberator, I guess. And when you see today how the people of Zimbabwe react to his ousting, you also measure that he was not such a big hero for the last years or decades. Mm-hmm. His power has been a long decline in terms of the respect of democracy, in terms of economic success. The fact that he expelled all those white farmers without compensation and nationalized a lot of things and gave the land to his friends, all of these failed dramatically, and the country from a rich country became a total failure. And you can see today that the other African leaders are quite happy that he's left in the way it has. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has still the appearance of constitutional legality, but nobody seems to regret, really, Mr. Mugabe.
Tom, we're very lucky to have you here with your decades of experience covering the White House and different presidential administrations. How much of a role did kind of Cold War realpolitik play in Mugabe's sort of long survival? Because I was very struck how many times he's visited the White House, and he visited under President Carter, he visited under President Reagan, visited under the older George H.W. Bush, and each time you can see these presidents saying how tremendously pleased they are to see him, how, Zimbabwe is a good ally for the United States. This is right up until 1991, even after, actually in Zimbabwe, his troops, trained by North Korea, had carried out terrible massacres in places like Matabeleland. So what was the kind of realpolitik explanation from Washington?
Well, I think Washington viewed him as he's a tin pot dictator, but on some things he's our dictator. For a long time, that's what sustained him with Washington. It was lip service from Washington, but you had the feeling that a succession of presidents were kind of staying out of it, were keeping their hands off of this and allowing Africa to worry about it. Several White Houses have known he's not a freedom-loving Democrat, and they weren't going to do anything to prop him up, but they did not want to look like they were aiding and abetting a possible coup to get rid of him.
Well, let's turn to a much more democratic story, but one in which the ending is also not completely known, the country of Germany. So, Philippe, we're very used to stories about, months of negotiations to form a government in Italy or in Belgium. But Germany, this is the first time that we have seen, months of negotiations end in, for the moment, failure, and people talking about another set of elections after only 2 months. And what is going on in Germany, and why should people on the other side of the world pay attention to what is happening in Germany right now?
Well, obviously, Germany is the most powerful European country, so everybody should pay attention on what's going on. And Angela Merkel has been a strong leader for Europe. So I guess President Macron, France, is also worried to see how it develops on the other side of the border. But what's going on in Germany? I mean, Angela Merkel, her party of CDU and with the Bavarians of the CSU, they won, but they won a short victory, 33%. Everybody was shocked by the fact that the AfD, Alternative for Deutschland,
which is far right, anti-immigration far
exactly,
right party.
Far right anti-immigration party, got over 90 seats in the Bundestag. The other aspect of this of the result of the elections 2 months ago is that no one has a clear majority and no one has a clear combination for a parliamentary majority. So they tried this Jamaican negotiation,
which is named for the colors of the flag
exactly.
of Jamaica because it matches the party colors of those parties.
And probably too many colors. It shows that it's very difficult to get the Green Party to agree with the conservative and even the liberals.
So you had a pro-business party, you had the mainstream center-right conservative party, and you had a kind of ecological, slightly
right.
left-wing party trying to form a coalition.
And in Europe, you have to notice that most Green parties are quite leftist. And you can see in the negotiations, they disagreed on almost everything, on immigration, of course, on energy, on taxes, on Europe. And so it collapsed. Now the options Mrs. Merkel is left with are a big coalition with the SPD, which means with the socialists.
Center left, yeah.
Or new elections.
Tom, We'll come back to this after the break as well. But when Angela Merkel won, as Philippe said, this very kind of narrow victory, it was an interesting moment, wasn't it? Because here in Washington, you had seen people, including actually Donald Trump, saying, look at the results of all these elections around the rest of the world. There's a wave of populism. The British have voted to leave Europe. The Americans have voted to elect me. Next, we will see this in, you know, maybe the French will elect a far-right leader. Maybe Germany will sweep Angela Merkel from power to punish her for admitting, you know, a million refugees. You would hear that from people close to Donald Trump. And then, in France, Philippe's country, we saw Emmanuel Macron beat off the far-right, and then Angela Merkel seems to have won a fourth term as chancellor. And so people said, oh, well, maybe actually politics is more normal than we thought. Now, with the collapse of these coalition negotiations, how comfortable is that theory that politics is more normal than we feared?
I don't think it's a comfortable or much of a credible theory anymore, although we'll have to see if Merkel calls an election and does better. I still think she's suffering from anti-immigration hangover years later.
We'll come back to this in just a minute after a short break.
More of Issues in the News in just a moment. This program is coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. And a reminder that Issues in the News is available for free download on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. And don't forget to like us on Facebook. Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel. Philippe Gilly, U.S. Chief Correspondent for Le Figaro, and Tom DeFrank, Contributing Editor for the National Journal. Our moderator is David Rennie, Washington Bureau Chief for The Economist.
So, Tom, you were saying that there's clearly an anti-immigration hangover. The polling is really interesting in Germany, that clearly none of the mainstream parties are offering something that the voters are willing to kind of get behind in a massive way. But as an individual, people are quite happy to see Angela Merkel stick around. So there's a sense that she has some sort of personal trust, but are you saying that really mainstream parties across the rich world are really losing their credibility and we're not sure what's going to replace them? Is that one way of looking at what's happening?
Well, yes, but I think that's probably a small stretch. I mean, I think it's fair to say that people like Merkel and her party are under more pressure than anybody thought that they might have at this point. And with Brexit coming down the road in less than 2 years now, the kind of the body politic of the world needs to have Germany more stable than it seems to be now.
Philippe, you're from France. You're the correspondent for Le Figaro, the great French daily newspaper. Do you see any parallels between what's happening in Germany and what just happened in France in terms of a kind of rejection of the traditional long-established parties and a kind of focus on the personality of one leader? I mean, is there any kind of parallel, you think, with what's going on? That Merkel polls far better than her party, and that there's a real kind of sense that none of the parties
right.
have...
Right. The big difference is that Macron is a brand new leader for us. He's been there only a few months, and he was quite a big unknown until then. Whereas Mrs. Merkel is there in power for 12 years, so there is probably a fatigue mm-hmm. that is attached to Mrs. Merkel that Emmanuel Macron has not yet reached. In terms of political forces, I think the far right and populist parties in Europe are a complication, but they are not the main decider there. They are like a blocking minority, if you want. Mm-hmm. And that leaves the others with a difficult alternative in Germany as well as in France, which is, you know, the rationale of those right-wing parties is that all other parties are the same. Mm-hmm. That they can call themselves right or left or whatever. They are all the same and they are the system.
And let's not forget, we talk about the far right, and of course, particularly in the German context, given their Nazi history, it is very shocking to see the far right doing well. But the far left did well also.
Absolutely.
And that's shocking. I mean, if you add up the score for Die Linke, the essentially East German yeah. Communist Party...
And the same in
and
France
the far
with
right,
Jean-Luc
the same
Mélenchon.
In France with, you have a far left yeah. in
and
France,
you have
too.
To notice as well that those parties, the far right and the far left, for instance, when they sit in the European Parliament, they always vote the same way on almost every issue, mm-hmm. where they have a totally different discourse, but their action and their rejection of the mainstream parties is the same.
Tom, looking at how it sort of feels in Washington, you could say, well, okay, in Europe, the main parties feel exhausted. Here in Washington, on the face of it, you go to Congress and the Republicans are in control and the Democrats are, you know, close behind, and the two parties are in good shape. Is that actually how it feels when you really talk to the people taking decisions? Or these parties in Washington are just as fragile and kind of weak as in Europe?
I think they're incredibly weak and fragile, David. Public opinion polling consistently shows that there is not just a disdain for Congress, Republicans or Democrats, it is a contempt. Their approval ratings are far below President Trump's, whose approval ratings are historically low, but Congress is lower. The parties themselves are under great pressure. For the first time in the many years that I've covered Washington, I see a chance in the not-too-distant future for a genuine third party, one that actually has a chance of winning an election rather than disrupting one.
That would be an extraordinary thing, given the American system. Well, let's turn now to a subject, sexual harassment and allegations, almost always of men using their power to sort of either harass or attack women sexually. This is not the kind of subject that this program would normally cover, particularly if it's involving Hollywood stars. You know, this program doesn't do that. But, Philippe, there's a reason why we sort of have to, because this is going to affect politics and the way that government works, and it could affect an important Senate race in the state of Alabama on December the 12th. But it's also the Democrats are now not immune. What is happening in terms of American life? You know, we've seen the firings, you know, terminations of senior journalists. We've seen members of Congress being exposed. We've seen members of the Senate being accused.
It's really shocking the extent and the number of cases that are revealed every day, and the prominent people, including people that you would respect out of their professional work, like Charlie Rose, or
he's a famous TV journalist who's just lost his job after many decades.
And it won't stop. Clearly, there is this liberation of speaking out, and it won't stop. It will be a storm on Congress, definitely, when you look at the procedures. I've read that by some estimate, 4 in 10 female staffers in Congress have experienced some sort of sexual harassment or aggression. The way the process they have to go through to report it is so unbelievably complicated and convoluted that this will have to change, definitely.
Tom, there's a sort of sense, isn't there, that, you know, if you're wondering, how does this change so fast? Why does this feel like a tidal wave? It's, as Philippe says, once you have this kind of critical mass of women stepping forward and you realize how many women have these stories, simply it becomes impossible to wish them away. It becomes impossible not to believe that there is a serious problem. You've been in Washington a long time. Was this sort of always known about in sort of gossip and wink, wink and have a drink and, you know, that guy over there, goodness me, don't let your friend go home in a taxi with him? I mean, how open a secret has this been in Washington?
It has been very, very open. This is the way business has been done here for a long time. And I think it's ironic. I remember as a very young reporter, I'll make this a brief story, there was a very powerful Republican congressman from Ohio who was a committee chairman, and he was known to have put his mistress on the payroll. And the only reason this ever got reported is that the Washington Post found out about it, called the mistress, and she confirmed it. And she said, "It's very strange because I've been hired as a typist and I don't know how to type." Well, of course, he didn't resign, but he left after the next election. But so this has always been kind of part of the way business is done in this town, and not just this town. But I think what's happened, ironically, we talked about Hollywood. Harvey Weinstein, the prominent Hollywood producer, is probably more responsible for what's happening on the political side now, because he was accused with dozens or scores of alleged incidents And he has now been ostracized in Hollywood. And I think the sheer scale of the charges against Weinstein, I think, emboldened other women to say it's time to step forward. And it's really one of the ironies here is you have President Trump, who was accused by 12 women in the last campaign of inappropriate behavior. He denied it all.
While boasting about it on tape.
That's exactly right. And he was elected. And so it'll be interesting to see how that sorts out. But I agree with both of you. This is not going to turn around. There are going to be many more prominent figures in the media, in the arts, and in government who will have a problem very soon. There's a couple of big stories in the process now waiting to be published about a couple of very prominent people in Washington.
Philippe, you have people being accused who are Democrats. You have people being accused who are Republicans. You have people who are famous kind of liberals from Hollywood, and you have people who are famous conservative TV stars being accused. So there's a kind of symmetrical guilt. Mm-hmm. Is there a symmetrical response? Are conservative voters and Republican politicians proving just as shocked by these allegations as people on the left? Or is there a strange asymmetry to what's going on?
I think there is a strange asymmetry. When you look at what's going on with Roy Moore, candidate to Senate in Alabama, and the way part of his supporters react to the accusations that he's facing, basically saying, like for Trump, that this is fake news. When you also look at the apologies that people accused more on the left side of the spectrum, mm-hmm. Although I think they were insufficient and incomplete and not satisfying, most of them, at least their instinctive reaction is to apologize. Mm-hmm. On the right, it's more to deny it, so far as I can see it.
And Tom, you could have a theory that part of that is just, you know, feminism and gender equality is more of a kind of Democrat thing than a Republican thing. Is there also a political calculation, because here we are in Washington, that if a Republican starts to say this is very, very serious, then what does that say about their president? Because you have a president, as you say, who has been accused. So is there just an element of political calculation that you cannot concede this point as a Republican?
Exactly right. And Mr. Moore likened his situation in Alabama to President Trump's. I'm sure they were not thrilled.
The White House is not delighted by that.
But that's a calculation that suggests maybe we can ride this out.
And at the end, very briefly, so listeners of a certain age may remember at the end of the 1960s, you had the summer of love and flower power and hippies, but there was a dark side too. The darkest of the dark side was the murderous cult in California led by Charles Manson, a failed musician, criminal, who persuaded his followers to murder 9 people, I think it was. He's just died in prison, Philippe. Did that, to you, sort of speak as sort of memory from history or the end of an era? What did it say to you when you saw him the news of his death?
Well, it's a horrendous story, and we all remember, even though I was not a working journalist at the time, but it didn't strike me as the dark side of the 60s and peace and love generation. I mean, maybe it's the case, I don't know, although I have read in the New York Times that they say it was, on the contrary, a harbinger of today's far right. And even Laura Ingraham reacted to that on Twitter and said, no, I mean, do you mean right so far as Donald Trump on the economy? I don't understand this polemic about this. I mean, the guy was a murderer.
He did want to start a race war. I guess that was the explanation.
Yeah,
he said he wanted
right.
to start a race war.
Was he more than a murderer and a cultural phenomenon? Maybe Tom knows better.
Well, this was a sick guy who had this cult-like messianic hold over younger people who would do or say and anything, including murdering innocent people.
Well, that is all the time we have. And thank you to Tom DeFrank, contributing editor for The National Journal, and Philippe Gély, U.S. chief correspondent for Le Figaro. This program was produced by Rebecca Ward, and our engineer was Zubair El-Tayeb. And I'm David Rennie of The Economist. Thank you for listening.